Each week, nearly a dozen movies are released theatrically. 40 films a month, more than 400 a year. That's a plethora of cinema. Too much cinema. You'd have to be an addict to see all that. But don't fret. We've got you covered. This is Cinematics.
Hey everyone, what's up? It's another week of Cinematics, new episodes for episode number 233. Our mission as a crew over Cinematics is to spotlight every single week. There's a whole bunch of movies that are coming out of the box office or maybe hitting Netflix or a lot of big streaming options. We try to give you other options that might be available for streaming or in the big theater that you might have missed. There's a couple of gems this week. Hopefully, we'll be able to bring some value, added value to this episode. I'm Greg Trusvasi. I'm joined by Eric Holmes and Bruce Perky. Eric Holmes, how's the last week been? Have you done any interviews, et cetera? What have you been up to?
Yeah, I got a couple interviews. One of them was with the one of the writers and directors of French Girl, which I'll be talking about today. That one was really good. I like that one a lot. Bad Things Happen as well. We lost a friend, Brad Finney. Anyone that follows, I guess, the PCW wrestling, who's known as Bradley Rotten. He also had made a bunch of great music. If you go on YouTube, look, Nothing Left Official 2601. There's a lot of singer, songwriter, like acoustic stuff. Yeah, Andrew Martin hit me up about it. And I remember we talked to him on the show, kind of conversed with him over Messenger a couple times. And yeah, he was really solid dude. And it effing sucks. And he was also a member of the Cinematics group, would chime in from time to time. And yeah, don't know if I should say, I think it was like medical complications, but don't want to get too much more into it beyond that, because, you know, that's private stuff. But yeah, we lost a good one. And cheers, yeah. Brad.
That's Brad Finney, like to call himself. It was dubbed Bradley Rotten. He was guest on Cinematics maybe a couple of years ago, and he was a big part of our Cinematics Facebook group. Just a really nice, down-to-earth human being. He will be missed. He's was struggling with health issues the last couple of years, and I remember he's also a Facebook friend. He never really complained about his ailments. He was just always upbeat and very good guy. Bruce, you want to add any couple of things regarding Brad Finney?
Yeah, I remember having him on the show here, and it was interesting because I heard a lot about him kind of roundabout, mostly through, like you said, through Facebook, and we conversed some around movies, a little bit more around music, and I had listened to some of his music, and of course we talked to him on here. I think we were reviewing that movie about that. It was a documentary about this wrestler a while back, and we talked to him for quite a while. He was on here for, I think he was on here for like a good 45 minutes or so. I know he also struggled with a lot of health stuff, and there was a few times he made calls out on Facebook for aid and for assistance, and I was just like, damn, I wish I lived within driving distance because I can't do anything. And it's one of the interesting quandaries, I think, with this connectedness online, where it's like you feel connected, but when real stuff happens, you can't really do anything.
100%.
It's weird. So you have this strange combination of feeling connected to somebody you've kind of never met. But it was really sad when I saw that pop up on my Facebook feed. I was like, yeah, that sucks really bad.
Yeah. Anyways, rest in peace, Brad Finney. Just a really good guy. And selfishly on my end, just, I don't want to lose nice people in my life. This is on a selfish level. And he was one of the good ones. So again, much love to Brad Finney and his loved ones and his family. All right. So we have a lot of features this week. Bruce, I didn't ask, how was your week? What did you do? What did you do this week? Any on the bright side, anything good that you've seen?
I caught up on a Academy Award winning movie, and of course,
Spaceman. Is that it? Did you like it?
It might have been.
Did you like that movie?
We'll talk about it later.
Do you want to be part of Cinematic? Did you like Spaceman? I'm asking you right now.
We'll talk about it later. Okay. All right. We're gonna have a counseling session. You're gonna be sitting down. I'm gonna get out the Nutella, and we're gonna talk a little bit. Let's see. All right. Skinny Greg man. Skinny Greg man.
No, that's skinny Greg man. I'm overweight Greg man. That's a reference.
Have you seen the person he was talking to?
That was a reference to that Adam Sandler film, Spaceman, which is available to stream on Netflix. If you dare, we're going to get to that later down the road. In all fairness, we're going to hear what Bruce said about Netflix, about this Netflix film. Eric Holmes hasn't seen it yet. Maybe I think after this discussion, he might be excited to see it down the road. For better or for worse. That's one of the movies. And Bruce, but like you were, I interrupted you, really interrupted you. What are there some gems to be had on this episode?
Yes, I would say no matter what, there are some gems to be had on this episode. Whether or not we agree upon them all, I think we're going to agree on some. Put it that way.
Okay, let's not bury the lead here, okay? There's a movie called Hundreds of Beavers. It took around 4 years to make, and it's a combination between live action, it's shot in black and white, animation. It's around 108 minutes, I believe, maybe 108, 109 minutes. It centers on this trapper who is trying to get, quote, hundreds of beavers to gain the hand of a woman he is smitten with. The problem is she is the daughter of this trading post owner, and he says, you cannot have the hand of my daughter unless you capture, kill hundreds of beavers. That is a plot of the movie, but you're wondering, 109 minutes, I was thinking maybe this could be a 60-minute movie, but no, it's actually a pretty epic film. And again, that combination between live action and animation, it's pretty inspiring to watch. I know how you feel about this, Bruce, but I have no idea what Eric thinks or thought of Hundreds of Beavers. Take it away, Eric.
There are so many beavers in this. What can you say about it? Remember when we saw Everything Everywhere All at Once and we all loved it? I believe at some point we're lamenting that it's like, this movie's so good. Unfortunately, like, it'll never win an Oscar. And then it did. And that was great. I think Hundreds of Beavers is kind of that same kind of movie. It's like, this movie's so weird and so crazy and so creative and so this and that. It would be great if something like this would kind of catch on. My guess is it won't, but we've been surprised in the past before. I love the comedy in it. It was really silly, but some of it was pretty clever. I like how some of it kind of felt like a video game. Like if you're playing Zelda and you level up in certain ways, it was kind of doing that sort of thing. When he's hungry and he looks at like the geese flying and the geese turn into like pretzels floating in there. Like, you know, it's just got a bunch of really silly stuff like that. The physical comedy is really good. Like even the kind of weird, they do these weird kind of animation sort of esque physical, like when he's climbing the tree, you know, his hands are going like that with the little burrs following behind him. Yeah, I mean, and this thing's like jam packed. It was probably 20 minutes into the movie, and I felt like I've been watching it for 3 hours. That sounds like a bad thing, but I mean, that's just how many jokes and gags and all sorts of interesting stuff they just cram into that. And then so to go the full, you say 109 minutes, this thing is a feat to behold, and it's pretty damn good.
The lead actor is Rylan Brixen-Coletous, and he's also the co-writer of this epic film. It's the featured directing debut of Mike Cheslick. Eric was mentioning jam-packed. This slapstick humor, obviously, it's a little bit of an ode to silent film. There's a lot of the movie that's very, hardly any dialogue. There is some dialogue, though. Also some, this is not a spoiler, also a little bit of beaver dialogue, which is really interesting. This is and Eric was saying, it is a feat. The thing is, I can't remember, I don't know many movies, maybe it's a Mad, 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 Mad World, that has so many jokes crammed into its running time. This is right up there as far as the slapstick humor and the jokes maybe every 20 seconds. Bruce.
Looney Tunes. It's the live action Looney Tunes.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce. Very much so. I love this movie. Yes. Mad, 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 Mad World. This is like up there in classic status in my book. This is a movie that, like you said, it's just packed. But what it does, I think that's great. So it has a visual comedy. It has, quote, live action cartoon aesthetic that's going on here. And also what Eric says is exactly right. There's also this kind of game, video game questing going on in here. But what I really appreciate, so the gags are great throughout, right? What I really appreciate is this is an awesome example. I mean, in comedy in general, I would say this is a great example of how you plant seeds for later jokes and you keep paying them off. And this movie does that in multiple ways. Like it has jokes that are great on their own, but then they become ongoing running gags that become part of the plot. A perfect example, and I'm not going to say how it plays out, but there's a thing where he's trying to just climb a tree. He's hungry, right? It starts out with him. We didn't even say what the story was, right? He starts out, his Applejack factory or whatever it is gets destroyed. So he's like the lone survivor of this.
Of his own doing.
Yeah. Well, the beavers were involved too.
Oh, that's true.
So basically he's left alone in Hungary in the woods, and he is not a trapper at that point. He doesn't know how to trap, and he has to kind of fend for survival. So like the first, I don't want to say 15 or 20 minutes is him just trying to do anything to get any kind of survival. And then it goes from there and becomes kind of this giant quest. But at one point he's trying to climb a tree and just get some eggs because he's so hungry. And he finally gets up to the eggs after all these kind of mishaps that you'd get in a cartoon. And he whistles. He's so happy. He's like, woohoo, you know, I whistled. He got it. And then, of course, immediately this cartoony, like, woodpecker flies over and starts pecking him on the head, knocks him off the tree. And that little thing, him whistling, woodpecker coming, pecking on his head, becomes an ongoing joke that is used in the actual plot. And there are probably 10 or 12 things like that where there's something that's used early on that kind of loops back around and comes back to play. So that's what I think. That's where I think you get the combination of silly, quote, dumb comedy and clever plotting built into the comedy as well. And also, it's just, like you said, it's epic. It's epic in ways that are kind of amazing. I love everything about this movie. I think it's almost, I could almost call it unique. I think there's a pull quote on one of the posters, and I can't claim this, but it's absolutely perfect. It's like Guy Madden meets Chuck Jones. And I say, right. Yeah, yeah, it is that. And then somewhere else, there's a quote from Guy Madden, and I didn't pull it, but it's amazing what Guy Madden says about this movie, and he obviously loves it too. I can't say this is bad for anybody to watch. Anybody should give this a try. Whether it will be a cup of tea, it's comedy, right? So it won't be. It's a very unique, weird thing, but I think anyone should give this a try because it is amazing.
I don't know how much this movie cost, and I'm not as expert as Eric or Bruce on this animation level tip and the mixture of live action, but this is one of the best looking movies I've seen this year, last couple of years. It's especially with the black, I love black and white films with that and that silent film aesthetic to it. It's gorgeous. If they come out with some kind of Blu-ray edition, whether it's 4K or extended or even just a rote Blu-ray, I'm paying for this physical media release. It's so beautiful to look at. I'm just pretty much gobsmacked at how amazing this movie is. Also, this crew should be handed the keys to some kind of big movie and to see what they can do. I don't know how you guys feel about that. I just think just give these guys possibly a blank check, maybe a little oversight, and see what they can do with cinema, because they've already done it with whatever little means they had financially.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the look on it, it is beautiful, but it's like, it looks cheap. Like the style of it makes it look like it's, because like the animals are obviously people in beaver costumes, the right. Birds, like obvious, but that's like the style of it. But then the way it's all put together and like some of the animation, like even when they animate the main guy, you know, some of it looks like really kind of rough around the edges, but I think that's more of a style than a limitation. But yeah, to your point, it's definitely interesting to look at for sure.
Yeah. Hundreds of beavers ratings. What, by the way, it's not, it has a nationwide rollout. So it rolls out every single week. Well, I'm going to leave the actual link on the website where you can hopefully hundreds of beavers plays in your town, in your city. You can catch it on a given weekend. If not, please put this on your to watch list. This is a great gem that we discovered here over on Cinematics. The wonderful people at Middle Class Film Class are going to be reviewing Hundreds of Beavers as well. We'd love to hear what they think of this movie. This is an easy 5-star film for me, Hundreds of Beavers. Eric?
6.9 beavers.
6.9 stars.
I give hundreds of them if I could, but it caps out at 6.9.
And of course, Bruce Perky.
I'm 5-star classic, and I just want to mention, I don't think we talked enough about the star, Ryland Brixen Cole Twos, I guess if I'm saying the name right.
Yes.
Has to do a lot of heavy lifting in this. If that actor is not really pulling off the physical comedy and everything in this movie wouldn't work half as well. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot to be said for his performance. There's a lot to be said about this movie. The one thing about, I'm warning you guys, once you see Hundreds of Beavers, if you see it in the theater, that's great. It's one of those movies, you're going to have to watch it again. There's just so much stuff that's going on.
Oh.
It will, yes, Eric.
At least 30 times. Like this thing is so dense that like you can't get it all in one sitting.
Right. Look,
this is also one of those movies you could drop in on at any time. Like if you've seen the movie once and this is on some kind of a streaming channel and you just dropped in on this movie, you would have fun in any part of this movie.
There are hundreds of beavers and there's hundreds of jokes. I'll be honest, all of them landed with me. There wasn't a joke where I said, oh, this is just stupid, and a waste of my time. What is that? That's 1,000%, 100% batting average. Did you guys say?
You just think, they think back. I bet you each think about things like, oh, the fish, just watching the fish and him trying to get the fish and the fish not being gotten in various ways. It's a tiny little thing. And I loved everything about that. The wolves. I could just say words. The wolves. Everything with the wolves. Great. The
ice trapper. Floes. Ice so floes.
The ice floes. Every night with the trapper. So you just go on and on and on. There's
card games. Things. Card
when
games.
When he's trying to catch the fish. And then he tries to set the pole there. The fish takes a pole. And then he sets up the snowman holding the pole. And then he rigs the snowman so it catches the fish in the other hand. Like, raises its hand like, I got one.
And then there were none 10 little Indians aesthetic of how they treat dogs in this movie.
And then anytime the raccoons eat the rabbit, all that's left is a shoe with the bone sticking out of it.
Yes.
By the way, is that a spoiler? That's not a spoiler because there's
how do you spoil this?
No,
it's impossible.
There's just too many jokes. So the big spoiler is it will be a spoiling kind of season. I think if you don't watch this, you have to watch Hundreds of Beavers. Even if you don't love it as much as we do, I think bottom line you can tip your that proverbial hat to the effort involved into this, in my opinion, our opinion, cinematic masterpiece. So that's Hundreds of Beavers. Moving forward, that's it, right? We all done with Hundreds of Beavers. We can talk about 2 hours. I know that, but yeah, Eric.
Yeah, I'm not done with it, but I suppose we're done talking about it for this moment, and then this will probably be like a movie that gets brought up a lot. Like, you know, we'd see some other crazy movie and be like, blah, blah, blah. Kind of like Hundreds of Beavers when they bought that. This is going to be that kind of movie, I'm pretty sure.
I'm so excited for the future behind the cast and crew of Hundreds of Beavers. I haven't seen their previous work, but I think this will put them just on a great direction as far as creatively. Now, Eric Holmes and Greg Srizavasti, time to sort of a Siskel and Ebert time for us. So, Bruce, you can snooze, you can relax. Eric, you're going to get your chance to relax. Next segment. Eric, in this world, we only have one life, right? We have to make a difference in people's... I want to say that I even though I'm a selfish narcissist, I like to think I make a difference in people's lives. I've made a huge difference in Bruce Perky and Eric Holmes' life. All you guys got to do is nod, right, Bruce? Are you going to get a nod?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, okay. Very good. You've made a difference in my life, too. But look, here's the thing. There is, with One Life, it's a movie called One Life. It's bigger than me, Eric Holmes, or Bruce Perky. This is a true story. This guy named Nicholas, quote, Nicky Winton. Nicky Winton was back in before the start of World War II. He was a young London broker. He's played in the movie by Johnny Flynn. And he was hearing what was going on in Czechoslovakia, predominantly Jewish children. He wanted to rescue a lot of children from Czechoslovakia before the Nazi occupation. He's just, again, a young London broker, and he wanted to make a difference. So he travels to Czechoslovakia, and he gets involved with volunteer work, and then he starts dreaming big, meaning he wants to get these refugees out of Czechoslovakia because a lot of them are, who knows, they are definitely in danger. So One Life, a big part of it deals with the past, with Nicholas Winton trying to get these children along with his fellow colleagues out of Czechoslovakia. That's one part. And the other part flashes back to years later when an elderly Nicholas Winton, played by Anthony Hopkins, looks back on his life. His wife, Nikki's wife, is played by Lena Olin. We're going to mention Lena Olin pretty soon, later on in our Spaceman review, but here she plays the wife of Nikki, played by Anthony Hopkins. And Nikki, at this moment, he feels that no matter how many refugees he rescued before World War II in Czechoslovakia, he feels that very haunted for the people he did not rescue. One Life is directed by James, I believe, Hawes, and it co-stars, again, aforementioned Johnny Flynn, Romola Garai. She plays one of the workers who helps Nicholas Winton in his mission, and Helena Bonham Carter plays Nicholas Winton's wife. That is the premise of One Life. Eric, what did you think of this movie? Did it work for you?
I loved half of this movie. So whenever it was with young Nicky Winton, played by Johnny Flynn, and where does he go? You know, he goes to
Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, he goes to basically try to figure out how to get all the Jewish children and families out before the Nazis take over. and time's really pressing and they're running across a bunch of obstacles and it's really harrowing to watch and really great to watch. And then it'll hit a certain, start to hit a certain peak, and then they do a flashback or a flash forward to Nicky Winton older, played by Anthony Hopkins. And Anthony Hopkins is, oh, I'm just going to read the paper, have my coffee, going on for 5 minutes. I'm like, why are we watching this? Go back to the story. And then they do 5 minutes with Anthony Hopkins. And then they get back to the story with Johnny Flynn. You know, he's running across this problem, that problem. Helena Bonham Carter is like going in, trying to assert herself, like, no, this is, you know, we got to do this now. There's not going to be a tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to, oh, you got to do the. It's just a bunch of chaos and these people trying to come together to get some sort of semblance out of the chaos and just organize a thing to get people to safety. Oh, wait. It's been 15 minutes. We got to cut back to Anthony Hopkins. What's Anthony Hopkins doing? Oh, he's smelling the roses and trying his slippers on. Like, God, why do we keep cutting to this?
Holding now, that briefcase. He's holding that briefcase, that secret briefcase. That's one of the other activities he's doing. There's what's in the briefcase.
So pretty much any time they cut to Anthony Hopkins' character, I was checked out. I was just waiting for it to get back to the story. Because we want to see the story of what Nicholas Winton did, because it's pretty remarkable what he did. Yeah. Every time they cut to him in the what he's doing now. And like, I guess they had a little bit in that with Land of Bad, you know, when they would cut to the harrowing thing and then cut to like just the boring life stuff to kind of counterpoint it. Like it worked with Land of Bad here. It was just, but also when they did it with Land of Bad, it was like real quick, boring parts to make the point, and then they get back to it. With this, it's like, we're just going to sit on the boring part forever. Now, without giving away the end, I will say that Anthony Hopkins' part did finally pay off in the end, and it paid off really well, I think. But man, cut those early scenes, and this thing would have been great.
One life is 109 minutes. And yeah, I did like the Johnny Flynn moments a little bit better, but the Anthony Hopkins moments, him walking around or going to his car, like Eric was saying, it worked for me. I like that slow methodical stuff because it worked for me. It served as a really good counterbalance. Ultimately, when you get to the ending, it's pretty much an emotional. I teared up towards the end of One Life, and it was quite. Yeah, I actually really love this movie. I was surprised at how much I don't want to say enjoyed One Life, but first of all, it's a great educational film. You get to learn about this person who really made a huge difference in Czechoslovakia with these children, and the ending is just wow. So One Life in theaters March 15th. For me, wait, actually, Eric, you go first. Give me your rating on One Life.
I'll probably go 3 stars on this because the good parts are really good. The ending's really good. It's just those early Anthony Hopkins scenes, like you clip those, or even like just don't do the back and forth thing. Do like the early story and then cut to however many years later with him going up to where they go to the end. Maybe that could work, but yeah, just cutting to Anthony Hopkins and during like really pivotal scenes in the past where it's like, oh crap, what's going to happen? It's kind of like, it's very frustrating to watch. And my guess is that if it was anyone other than Anthony Hopkins, they would just cut those scenes. It feels like they kept them in there because we got Anthony Hopkins. We're going to leave everything in the movie with him in it, whether it works or not. And also, and I've mentioned this in the last couple of Anthony Hopkins movies we talked about, he's a great actor. Let's give him some roles, like some interesting roles. He's been playing the same confused old guy for the last 3 movies that I saw him in. And I'm kind of, he can do more than that. So maybe let him, or who knows, maybe he doesn't want to. I don't know, but. This has like a fantastic movie in it. It's just hampered by a bunch of strange editing choices, I guess.
I'm on the flip side. I think it is a fantastic movie. I was fine with Anthony Hopkins' scenes, loved him in the movie. I thought all of those scenes were actually necessary to counterbalance, for, like I said, the aforementioned counterbalance. Eric's rating is 3 stars. I'm giving One Life 4.5 stars. Would love to hear what you guys think of One Life, which is specifically in theaters March 15th. And from Bleecker Street. Yeah, thank you, Bleecker Street. Or the Screener Links, 109 minutes. Next up, yes, Eric.
I should also point out, I had a similar problem with The Post. And I guess...
I love The Post, yeah.
Yeah, there's people that love The Post. But the if you've seen the post, it kind of does a similar thing where you have to follow like Tom Hanks and them all like doing the new stuff, the you know, following the story, and you're interested in it. And then they cut to Meryl Streep going to parties. I'm like, I don't care. Get back to the story. That's kind of what One Life does. So if you saw the post and you love that, then you won't have the same problem I did with One Life.
Cool. All right. So mild recommend from Eric and strong recommend from me. Now, Eric, hang out because
I'll
this
take a nap.
Yeah, take a nap.
Dream of hundreds of beavers.
Bruce Perky is not going away because he has to review Knox Goes Away. It is Michael Keaton's latest film. He's also the director of this movie. This is his second feature directing picture. Knox Goes Away centers on John Knox. He is a hitman played by Michael Keaton. He's trying to make amends with his estranged son, played by James Marsden, because his son made a huge criminal mistake, and his son comes back to his dad and asks dear old dad, hey, dad, you're a criminal. I need to cover up a crime scene since you know how to do it. Can you help me? The problem is, dear old dad, again, John Knox, he has dementia, and his dementia is escalating. It's so bad that Knox's latest and last hit went south. So not only does Knox have to clean up his own mess from his latest job, he has to clean up his son's criminal mess as well. So two messes for the price of one for Knox. It actually feels like hundreds, not hundreds of beavers, hundreds of problems, especially since he has dementia. The movie also stars Ray McKinnon, Marcia Gay Harden. It runs 114 minutes. And it's only in theaters March 15th. It has sort of a film noir-esque element. Bruce and I, this week, we're going to be doing a quick spoiler discussion of Knox Goes Away that will be exclusive for our Cinemax Patreon members. Bruce, Knox Goes Away, forgettable for you? Were there some merits in this movie?
I see what you did there. Forgettable.
Yes.
No, well, you know, it's hard to say. Ask me in a month or two if it was forgettable. So here's my reaction to this movie is, it starts out with him. He's meeting his partner that he obviously goes on hits with all the time. He talks, you know, he's got this estranged relationship with his kid. You kind of get the idea. He's just a difficult guy. He's not been a great dad. He's just kind of been, I mean, kind of makes sense. You know, he's living this life as a hitman. He's probably not the most fuzzy, warm person in the world. So, you know, he's going out on this hit, but you know, before that, you find out about him having this, what is it? Jakob Creutzfeldt, I think is what it's called, which weirdly, oddly, I have had a distant relative by marriage who actually got this condition. It's very, very, very rare and usually don't live very long with it. Like, it goes fast. And that's kind of the idea of this. The dementia is going to go, what do they say? Weeks. They give him weeks.
It's sort of like, Bruce, it's sort of like a ticking time bomb trope, like DOA, yeah. Right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. DOA, that's a good comparison. The difference with DOA is like, you're poisoned. You have this amount of time to live. I'm going to have to find out who poisoned me. I'm going to find out who killed me, you know? Whereas this movie is like, I've only got so long to do stuff and be effective in my life like I used to be, which he's known as, kind of like we just saw with the killer, right? If the killer all of a sudden found out his abilities are going to degrade immensely within weeks. And I really was interested in that beginning concept. He goes out in the first hit that we see, and immediately you see how things can go sideways with all of a sudden what he's facing and the implications of that. And like, oh my gosh, how is this movie going to go forward? Like, what's going to happen to him? Is this going to be, this could go all kinds of directions. Then his son shows up and it goes that direction. And that's where the movie started going downhill for me because the stakes of that were so low for me. Now I know, oh, it's a family and he's got to reconnect with his son and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, to me, that was such a writing kind of a moment in the movie. It was like excuse conveniently for son to just show up now and have just murdered somebody and need dad to help him cover it up. And oh, dang, dad has this condition. I really started falling off board on it at that point. And then it became, unfortunately, instead of being like, oh my gosh, this tension device, this like, when is it going to hit him and how is it going to affect him? Instead, it became to me the annoying device. Like when you have people in characters in movies that have abilities, but the abilities are only used when it's convenient for the plot. And that's how this kind of works. it only is a problem when it's convenient for the plot, but yet when it can't work for the plot, then he is able to know things. And there's a whole subplot with a prostitute that he sees every week, which I thought was absolutely nothing. Yeah, this movie unfortunately just fell flat for me.
Yeah, also the prostitute is played by Joanna Kulig, from the actress from Cold War and Kompromat. I wish she had much more stuff to do in this movie. When you cast Joanna Kulig in your film, obviously we know why Joanna Kulig took this job. Chance to work with Michael Keaton. We forgot to mention Al Pacino. Al Pacino plays the boss and pretty much sort of handler for John Knox, and Pacino has a small role in this as well. But I just feel like Joanna Kulig was underutilized. Maybe there were some deleted scenes left on the cutting room floor, but I ended up actually liking it more than you. I thought the son part was, it is a trope. I just went with this entire movie. I saw this movie. I loved it. I had my mom watch it. She loved it as well. Loved the twisty stuff in this movie. And it is a tropey type of film. We've all seen, Bruce, you and I have seen these type of movies before. Just sort of went with it and the logic stuff. Yeah.
For me, it wasn't the trope as much. It was the stakes. Because I thought the stakes were, to me, kind of non-existent. Like, the stakes were, and I'm not going to say what happens. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but hey, I bet you can guess what happens. His son comes with him with a problem, and I bet you can guess what happens.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess the only interest is...
solve it and come closer together.
I guess the only interest is...
Hey, Eric, that's a spoiler. What are you doing? I'm kidding.
I didn't see movie. I can't
spoil. So once again, I guess the only interest is, like, how does he get there? And how he gets there is kind of like, okay, sure. But and then there's this whole thing with the police detectives trying to solve him and to solve it and figure him out. And yeah, no, it just didn't work.
I loved I liked the police detective, and me being Asian, it was nice seeing an Asian American woman in it. That I know that has nothing to do
it
with
was.
Efficacy.
Give them something to do. Sorry. But,
right. Yeah. And like Bruce says, I mean, in so many words, it has nothing to do. It's great to have minority representation, has nothing to do with the efficacy of the actual narrative. Okay, these are, that's apples and oranges, but for me the apples and oranges work together. It was a nice fruit cocktail. Knox Goes Away again, 114 minutes, only in theaters March 15th. Bruce and I'm gonna make Bruce's life very easy this week. We're just gonna spend 3 or 4 minutes doing a mini review, so that'll be for our Patreon mini spoiler stuff. Just there's a certain twist in the movie that Bruce was saying it's well, I don't even know if it's a twist. You might be able to see it.
I didn't say a thing.
100 miles
guess
away.
What happened?
What?
I didn't say a thing. And guess what happened? Just listen to Eric about 3 minutes ago.
Okay, so Bruce and I won't do any more spoilers for our Patreon. Patreon members, forget about it. No, anyway.
Quick question. Yeah. It says Marcia Gay Harden's in it. She got a big part, or is she just kind of blink and you miss it kind of role? Well,
Bruce, should we mention who she? Yeah, we can mention who she is, or is that a kind of a surprise? No, should we mention?
I mean, it says she's in it.
She is.
I just want to know if it's like a big part or a small.
It's
part.
It's a small part. Okay. But should we mention who she is, or
doesn't matter?
Yeah, she plays his wife. She's his estranged wife, Marcia Gay Harden. Yeah, it's a one scene in the movie. I think Ray McKinnon. I always liked him as a character actor. He's in the beginning part of the movie as well. Some really good stuff in this movie. I don't know. I really enjoyed this Michael Keaton directing. I haven't seen The Married Gentleman in years. I need to rewatch that. That was his other directing effort. I thought, Bruce, didn't you like Michael Keaton in this movie? Is it sort of negligible because he's always going to be good in a movie because you like, he's such a good actor? Did you find him?
Yeah, he's fine. He's good in the movie, but yeah, it just didn't move the needle. That's the problem. Okay. It's the script that really threw me off. Yeah, he just didn't have enough to do.
Okay. Before we get to ratings, I just want one warning regarding Knox Goes Away. If you're thinking, when you say crime thriller, if you're thinking of an action-packed crime thriller, you're not going to get it with Knox Goes Away, okay? That's just a little bit of a mini warning. It's more of a character type of piece. That said, I enjoyed Knox Goes Away. 4 stars for me. Bruce?
2.5.
2.5? How dare you? How 2.5 stars from Bruce
Perky?
That's
pretty generous, I think, honestly.
Oh, here we go. Okay, well, look. Listeners, most importantly, I'm recommending it. Bruce is not. Tell us which train you're on, okay? All right, now, next up, all three of us review this movie, remembering Gene Wilder. There's going to be a national expansion for this documentary. It's in New York this Friday, March 15th. So that's why we're covering it for this episode. We're covering movies opening the week of March 15th. What else is there to say? Remembering Gene Wilder is remembering a comedy icon, Bruce and I are of the same generation. We're both Gen Xers. And I'm going to put words in your mouth, Bruce. Bruce and I probably grew up watching a ton of Gene Wilder films, because in the 70s and the 80s, he was among the comedic greats. He was a box office opener. Okay, whether it's his films with Richard Pryor, movies like Silver Streak, Stir Crazy. Did he do? And then there's
No Evil, Hear No Evil.
See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Eric.
Or the other way around. I can't remember. One of the two.
That movie and Stir Crazy and all that stuff is spotlighted in this documentary. There's also the Mel Brooks stuff. Mel Brooks is interviewed, and he talks in depth about his work with Gene Wilder and the producers and Young Frankenstein, and Blazing Saddles. So you're going to get all of that stuff. Of course, the stuff with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. A lot of that iconic stuff that you're going to, if you're a fan of Gene Wilder, you're going to enjoy. So this is a no-brainer for Gene Wilder fans. The big question is, does this documentary play to the back of the room? People who are not fans of Gene Wilder. And that's the huge question I have, because I'm in the bag for this documentary. I'm only going to say great things. I'm going to lead. Eric, does it play to the back of the room, or is it only a documentary for just huge Gene Wilder enthusiasts, which I don't know if you are or not? Did this documentary work for you?
I don't know that it plays to the back of the room, because there's nothing really revelatory about this. It's just, hey, Gene Wilder was a cool guy, and here's a documentary about his life. But at the same time, I can't imagine there's too many people in the back of the room. I don't know many people that don't like Gene Wilder. So this is kind of one of those documentaries that you're like me, and I'm assuming you guys like Gene Wilder. You're going to watch this and go, oh, yeah, I remember when he was in that. Oh, yeah, I remember him and Richard Pryor working together. For me, it was, I had no idea he was married to Gilda Radner. That I had no idea. And I guess, like, of everything in the documentary, that was probably the most interesting part, because, one, I didn't know that they were married. And then they go into Gilda Radner's death, which is really sad to see. So I guess that part was, new. But mostly it was just all nostalgia. Hey, I remember Willy Wonka. And it was cool to see kind of their take on that when it came out, because apparently it was a bomb. I didn't know that. But
I didn't know that either. I was surprised.
It was cool having them talk about the making of Young Frankenstein. Well, the producers skipped that. You know, they just kind of go through his whole career. You know, there's going to be maybe stuff that you don't know, maybe everything you do know. But, I mean, it's Gene Wilder. So it's just a documentary where you get to, you know, watch the greatest hits, so to speak. And, you know, it was pretty fun. But, yeah, to the back of the room, probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, Rain Pryor, the daughter of Richard Pryor, is also among the people interviewed. The aforementioned Mel Brooks. There is Harry Connick Jr., who possibly was a neighbor or a really good friend of Gene Wilder, is also interviewed. Bunch of people interviewed. What's interesting to me for this documentary is Gene Wilder is heard throughout this documentary a lot.
Yeah.
Even though he's since passed on. And that is specifically from an audiobook, maybe of his memoirs or a book that he released back in the day. So it's great to actually have the voice of Gene Wilder from an audiobook supporting this documentary as well. Just for me, it was great, because I always loved his voice. And I always loved Wilder. And it's a lot for me. This documentary was a huge bunch of member berries. I saw, what is it? Hear No Evil, See No Evil. I forgot again, like Eric, I don't know how you point. Yeah, I saw it in the theaters. There are a couple of Gene Wilder movies I saw in the theaters. I remember either reading a review of Haunted Honeymoon, and it was really bad review. They only spent maybe 30 seconds on Haunted Honeymoon, which Wilder directed. But I remember deciding not to go see it, because of the bad reviews. So as a teenager, Wilder was a huge influence for me. And it was great to see him, to see his work, and remember, I got to remember why I love Gene Wilder so much. Bruce.
Yeah, I'm similar to all of you. I love Gene Wilder. I'm trying to think. The first movie I ever saw on video cassette, and this is like in 1974 or something, because we had like a teacher in our family, and she had one of those big top loading video cassette players. I don't even think it was VHS format. And she got to bring it home, and she happened to have Willy Wonka. And that, like I said, that's a very long time ago. And I saw Young Frankenstein in the theater, double feature with High Anxiety, I think. I don't remember.
Anxiety. I love that film.
But yeah, I mean, once again, it's pretty much goes chronologically. It doesn't give you a ton of new stuff, although there's some production stuff you maybe not have ever heard before. You get to hear some behind the scenes stuff in some of these various iconic roles. It's not going to get any scandals. You're not going to have people saying, like, I don't know, how he berated them on set or something. It's just a loving tribute documentary to Gene Wilder. So it's not going to blow your brain apart with amazing information. Although, like Eric said, if you don't know about the Gilda Radner stuff, it might kind of blow your mind there. I actually kind of wanted to hear more about that, because that's always a part of his life that I thought was super fascinating. And his apparent absolute, like, melding of the minds there between the two of them. They seem to be just fast in love from what you heard, and just how it was such a short-lived time with them together. I would have liked to have heard more about that. I mean, I could probably watch a documentary just on that. But for what you got, it's like a warm bath, you know, like you'll just bathe in it. Enjoy Gene Wilder. It's going to have a good time if you like him. If you don't like him, I don't know what's wrong with you.
There was a quick bit when they were talking about see no evil, hear no evil, how, like, because they have a character that's blind and Rich Pryor's not blind. Gene Wilder's not deaf, but they wanted to kind of make that as realistic as possible. Like, That seems like something that people would do today, that I think people think, oh, they didn't care about it back then. But it was kind of neat to hear that they did care about that sort of thing back then.
And just stuff in there, they talk about how Richard Pryor was suffering from MS and in bad mm-hmm. shape by then.
Yeah.
And how he was really there for him as another human being, like on set while they were filming. Little things like that. I mean, they could have dived deeper into that stuff. I mean, I kind of understand why they didn't, because they're just leaving it as kind of more like a loving tribute, but they could have done it. I mean, I think we would have all enjoyed it, but that's fine. It was still good, you know.
I do remember seeing, like, the movies, like, you had Hanky Panky and The Woman in Red, and I haven't seen these since they came out. But
I saw them in theaters. Yeah.
I remember watching those in HBO, on, like, HBO, and Gene mm-hmm. Wilder was, like, always, that's what a cool guy looks like. Looking back on it now, he's kind of a nerd, but, like, it, you know, young Eric was watching it going, that's what I aspire to be when I grow up. I want to be as cool as that guy.
Yeah, he's so funny.
I think I actually saw the Frisco Kid in the theaters too.
My goodness, Robert
and
Aldrich.
I think it was one of those weird movies where, like, the film actually broke and you had to sit around for like 30 minutes while they fixed it or whatever.
Again, I think this is, all three of us are in the bag for this to an extent, for remembering Gene Wilder. I just hope that more people get to see this documentary. And like Bruce was saying, it's pretty much like a warm bath, warm blanket. It's just a comforting, insightful documentary. And if you are a huge Gene Wilder fan, you might know a lot of this stuff, but still doesn't make it less worth watching. It was a worthwhile watch for me. So remembering Gene Wilder for me, my rating is 4 stars. What about you, Bruce?
I'll probably go 3.5. I think this should be included in some 4K Gene Wilder retrospective as a supplemental disc. I mean, put three of his best movies on together and throw this on as a fourth disc, and I think it'd be an awesome addition.
I would buy that. I would definitely buy that, Bruce. Eric, what's your rating?
I'll probably go 3 stars on this. I kind of want to go 3-star banger, because, like, if you love Gene Wilder, you're going to like it a lot more. If you don't like Gene Wilder, again, if you're one of the three people that hate Gene Wilder for some reason, or you just don't know who he is, well, actually, I don't know. If you don't know who he is, maybe it'll endear you to him. But yeah, 3 stars. It's not groundbreaking, but it's, you know, if you're a fan of Gene Wilder, definitely check it out.
Okay, that is it. It is now going to be in New York again on March 15th, following week, March 22nd. It's in Los Angeles, followed by a national expansion. Again, the documentary is Remembering Gene Wilder, our last feature for this week. It comes out in theaters March 15th and on digital March 19th. It's a movie called French Girl, starring Zach Braff, Vanessa Hudgens, and Evelyn, I do not know how to pronounce her last name, Brochu. It's quote-unquote a heartwarming romantic comedy. Eric, what can you tell us about French Girl?
Yes, French Girl, from the writers of Independence Day Resurgence, James Wood and Nicholas Wright. This is not at all like Independence Day Resurgence. This is pure romantic comedy starring Zach Braff. And Zach Braff is kind of channeling JD from Scrubs. So if you're a fan of that, he's kind of playing a similar character in this. And it's basically Zach Braff is, or Gordon is, with his girlfriend, Ruby. and he wants to propose to her. And Ruby is, oh, I'm sorry, not Ruby, Sophie, I think. Either way, he's with his wife, and they go to see their parents, and you know they're all speaking French. I don't know if they're in France or I think it's French Canadian. I think they're in Canada. But either way, he goes to meet the parents, and he keeps doing, you know, keep messing up. It's kind of like a Curb Your Enthusiasm thing where they go in with good natured, good meaning, but they always like, oh, trip and break something. Oh, that's a family heirloom. I wish you didn't do that. And now we all hate you. You know, it's got that kind of comedy to it. But then
Sophie, that's her name. Sophie.
Yeah. Sophie.
Chandler. Yeah.
And then so Vanessa Hudgens' character comes into play, Ruby, and she's kind of like a Gordon Ramsay type. She's a TV chef pretty much. And then she wants to hire Sophie and bring her on like some TV show thing, kind of help her career and get that launched. And Zach Braff's cool with it. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, go ahead, go. And then he's having it, you know, he's staying with the family. He's kind of annoyed with them mostly. But then Zach Braff comes across a thing to find out that Sophie and Ruby used to be in a relationship, female-female relationship. And Zach Braff doesn't like that, not because it was a gay relationship, but because you're with your ex and you never told me once that they were your ex. Like this, I don't mind, but this seems like you're hiding something from me. And so that's kind of the issue that they're dealing with. It's mostly silly, definitely lighthearted and funny a lot of the times. And again, if you like Zach Braff, especially in Scrubs, you're going to dig it. And also William Fichtner is in this. He's not in it a lot, but when he is, holy crap, he's hilarious. I don't know if you ever, what was that? The Amateurs. He was in a movie called The Amateurs with Jeff Bridges. They were trying to make a porn movie. William Fichtner was in that. Like he had like little bit parts, but every time he came in, he just like pretty much just stole whatever scene he was in. Definitely the same way in there. In this, he's kind of he plays Zach Braff's dad. He's kind of an a-hole, but he's like a funny a-hole. Yeah. If they made the movie just about William Fichtner's character, that would alone would have been worth watching. But the rest of it is really cute. And if you're in for romantic comedies, this is a good one.
What is your rating on French Girl?
I think normally I would probably go 3 stars on this too, but I'm gonna give a full star bump for William Fichtner. Well, a half star bump for William Fichtner and another half star bump because I love JD and Scrubs, and this is kind of JD in Scrubs but older. So this might, you know, vary for other people depending on what you think of romantic comedies, but I thought that was a really, really sweet, charming, fun one. Check
okay,
it out.
Four stars from Eric Holmes for French Girl. Again, it is in theaters March 15th and on digital March 19th. Bruce Berkey, were you the first one to purchase a digital copy of French Girl? Because, wow, French romantic comedies is...
This will not be Bruce's cup of tea. Well, that I can almost
don't
guarantee.
Don't you dare speak for Bruce Berkey. He told me the other day that there's a shadow release next week. There's like something called like Late Night or Last Night for the Devil. And he says, nope, I'm going to do a rewind of French Girl. And I'm going to talk about it.
I will say... Right, Bruce, if like you're in like a really bummed out mood,
yeah,
then put in French Girl and you're like, that was refreshing. I'm glad I saw that. But like if you have to watch it for the podcast, you're gonna come out going, what the hell did you make me watch this?
Bruce, can you do us a favor for next week on episode 234 of Cinematics? Eric and I will watch Kumiko the Treasure Hunter, and I'm gonna do the rewatch on that. Can you tackle the rewind for French Girl? See what's up, maybe Kumiko or French Girl? Maybe. I don't know. Eric said 4 stars. We'll see. We'll see.
That's 4 stars for me. I'm saying for Bruce. Okay. Bruce is going to be like,
okay.
William Fichtner was awesome, but
okay, Eric.
I know what the comedy I like, okay. And I think I know the comedy that Bruce hates. I'm still not quite clear on the comedy Bruce likes, but I'm pretty sure the comedy that he hates. And
Hundreds of Beavers. I love it.
What is?
Yeah, there's only two beavers in this, but.
Okay, Eric. Look, Eric's a comedian.
Like,
4 stars for French Girl. What is Eric? What is Bruce's rating on French Girl? What is
probably 2 stars. If he watches it in the right conditions, he might be 3 stars, 3.5 on it.
What is my rating on French Girl?
4 stars.
Okay, thanks. That joke never gets old. I'm sorry. That never gets old. I love it. It's we go back to the freaking well. It's not even a well. It's like a There Will Be Blood oil rig. I'll still go back to that joke.
It's a tree where all the fruit just hangs near the trunk.
Okay, so let's get to recommends. Before we get to the movie of the week, which is Spaceman, we are going to talk about a movie called Poor Things. We don't have to get to the plot. It's an Oscar winner. Emma Stone won the Oscar. On our Cinematics Facebook group specifically, there are people who did not like Poor Things. One of our buddies, Angie Clark, was mentioning how she didn't like it at all. But it's not just Angie Clark. There are several members of our Cinematics Facebook group who were not huge fans of Poor Things. That said, I remember Matt Stillman, a fellow member, I think he put Poor Things as his number one. I know William Lindis from the Movie Bears podcast loves Poor Things. Let's get to Bruce Perky. Your overall thoughts on the movie. Was it overrated? Did it land for you? We all know that you're a huge Yorgos Lanthimos fan. So you're probably in the bag for Poor Things, I'm assuming.
Yeah, probably. At least I'm going to always give Yorgos stuff a chance because he's just on another wavelength. I mean, he's one of those guys like David Lynch or pick your weirdo auteur that seems to truly be doing their own thing and not just being weird for weird's sake. They just think and create in a different way. And I'm pretty sure Yorgos is one of those guys, especially the more, although he didn't write this, so that tells you something. But I mean, still, this is, first of all, my first impression was this is quite an odd and challenging movie to make it as far in the Oscar run as it did. And even to win an Oscar, I'm kind of surprised it did. And it won 3 or 4 Oscars. To be even nominated, I'm surprised. This could easily have been left off for a bunch of other movies because this is just not the kind of movie that usually makes it there. It, probably purely on the cachet of Yorgos, I think is helping it.
Wait, are you happy that it made it there? Because
yeah, I am. Yeah. I am. I think it's odd that it made it there because I definitely can see a lot of people. This is not the movie you recommend to everybody. This is the movie you watch and you go like, okay, I know who I can recommend this to. And I know certain people. Like, I would never recommend this to Angie Clark. I mean, other than I just said, hey, people, the movie's out there on Hulu. There you go. But if she said, like, should I watch it? I'd be like, yeah, it's probably not for you.
It feels like an Eric Holmes movie as well, right?
Eric, did you see this movie yet?
No.
Eric could, I could see Eric going either way on this one. I think he would definitely be interested in it and he could end up loving it, but he could also be annoyed by it. I mean, this is a movie that is definitely up its own
artifice.
I think it earns it. And everyone knows the plot and all that kind of stuff. All I would just say is it's an extremely odd movie, very well made, some incredible performances, a lot more comedy than a movie of this often would have. And I do definitely appreciate that. Any movie where a character, well, in this case, Emma Stone's character, Bella Baxter, who does like almost everything in this movie. At one point, she stands up, I think at a dance or a luncheon or dinner or whatever. And she's like, I'm going to go over and punch that baby because it's bothering her. Things like that just happen in this movie. And because she is essentially like a toddler brain in an adult woman's body. And she's learning very fast. But I quite enjoyed this movie. Once again, I could describe the plot, but this is more of a, hey, you experience it and you either go with the weirdness or you don't.
Superficial question, Bruce. Emma Stone or Lily Gladstone? Who gets the Oscar if you're a voter?
I wouldn't give it to either of them, but Emma far and above Lily. I mean, I'm sorry. Lily's performance was barely a lead performance. I wouldn't even probably call it a lead performance. It was a good performance. Honestly, she should have got probably nominated for supporting.
You know what I've heard that argument. I'm not arguing with
and
you.
And that was my biggest problem. I liked that movie. My problem was she should have been the lead and she wasn't the lead. That was my problem with the movie. Although I still really liked it. I think the focus should have been on her. And I think people want the focus to be on her, but it really isn't. And that's the problem.
Right. The argument against that is not my argument. The argument I hear on X is, well, Anthony Hopkins won an Oscar for 17 minutes of Silence of the Lambs. Or like you, to your point, her presence is felt throughout the entire narrative. So I don't know. Those are the points that are, but I can understand that you think the support, it should have been a supporting entry at least, even though, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would have given it to Natalie Portman probably, or I could probably name 6 or 7 roles I would have given it to, because this is a very showy role and that's why she gets it. And she does everything in this. So, I mean, give it to
Sandra Hüller. Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of Fall, would you have given it to her over Emma?
Probably.
Yes,
I think she had more to do as an actor.
Mm.
Honestly, I think Emma's performance in The Curse this year was more genius than her performance in this. But she's really good in this. I mean, I don't want to say she's not really good. I would say she should be nominated for this, but I would have probably given it to someone else.
So again, in this, because I know with a lot of Yorgos Lanthimos's movies, the acting is really, I don't want to say bad. It's definitely a style, but they're all pretty monotone. Yes, we are monotone. Monotone is what we are. Are you monotone?
It's not quite like that. I think it's a lot more animated than that. I think you'd enjoy the animated acting in this. It's weird still, because like I said, imagine her as like a wide-eyed toddler going out in the world, and you have to stop her from doing things. And she grows fast in a lot of harsh ways and fun ways and weird ways. And then you've got Mark Ruffalo playing this infatuated cad, and he's really over the top too, but animated. So I think there's a lot less of that in this from what, if you didn't like that before, you might like this more.
Yeah. I just remember like watching The Lobster. I'm like, all right, it's definitely weird, but good God, like the acting style. And I'm guessing that's a director's choice, not an actor's choice, because everyone's doing kind of the same thing. And I just remember watching it going, this is just like the way they deliver the lines is just boring. the boring like almost meets out the craziness that gets thrown in there.
And I can see that too. I think what I liked about this more than some of those is that this movie has things happen. Like it has chapters essentially, you know, like, so each 20 minutes or so you're in another things going on, you know, in 20 minutes you're just getting the opening and you're discovering her and this crazy mad scientist and you're kind of figuring out what's going on. And then the next 20 minutes, I won't say everything, but you know, it's her discovering romance. The next 20 minutes she's on a ship. Next 20 minutes, I won't say what happens, but there's,
but I guess what I'm getting at is that Emma Stone won the Oscar. And then, so if she's acting like everyone did in The Lobster, I'm like, I don't see it. But you're saying that they're actually being characters in this?
Yeah, well, and she's got to go from, like I said, like basically like someone who could barely speak, who's like a toddler, to essentially sentient adult woman in the role of this movie.
Also, another thing to quickly bring up, Yorgos Lanthimos, he didn't write The Favorite and he didn't write this.
Yeah.
And it's weird that, like, people are writing Yorgos Lanthimos-esque screenplays and giving it to Yorgos Lanthimos.
Well, a lot of these auteur directors, I love it when they adapt almost more than when they do their own stuff.
Yeah.
Like, think about David Lynch. When he does, I mean, I love some of his own stuff too, but when he does, like, The Straight Story, which I don't think he wrote, it's based on a real story.
I thought he did. Does, I'll look that up.
But, I mean, it's based on an actual thing that happened, so he's kind of constricted. And he's constricting himself with a G rating. And then you look at something like The Elephant Man. I mean, that's fantastic. And I think that sometimes that combination of the super weirdo with someone else's vision and having to take that and turn it slightly into yours, I think that's a great mix for me. I don't know.
Okay, so that is Poor Things. Currently, as of this recording, streaming on Hulu. Bruce, what is your rating?
I'm probably 4.5. This could go up as I sit with it, but it's 4.5 for me right now.
Okay. Before we get to the end of the show, I think we're going to start doing this. It's sort of a little bit clunky. Cinematics comments. I want us to actually start farming out comments from our actual members. There's a couple of things that I really enjoy this week. First of all, I'm going to be very self-serving. I recently saw Spaceman. We're going to get to that review in a few moments. I asked our wonderful members what they thought of the movie. Ryan Smith, a member of our Cinematics Patreon, he said, I really enjoyed it. I think there are a lot of things the movie doesn't explain well. Well, I think probably it doesn't explain a lot of things well. But anyways, he goes, I'm assuming it was cut out in the editing process. He gave it 4 out of 5. Joseph Navarro, one of the 3 musketeers for a middle class film class, said, it's good, a bit derivative at times. You got to be in the mood for this movie. Otherwise, it might not work for you. And I don't have it here, but I know Tyler Noe, who is another member of the middle class film class. If I recall, he gave it 5 out of 5, 5 stars. Put that on Letterboxd, and he really loved the movie. Jeremy Chappell, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Chappell or Chappell. He said, thought it was good. Spider creature is unnerving, and at first it was very off-putting, but that, in my opinion, fits the psychological discussion. Sandler's introspection is just as unnerving as the spider itself. We're going to get to the spider in a few moments. Finally, another topic, which was actually a little mini topic this week on our Cinematics Facebook group. Please join us for daily movie recommendations and being part of this movie, daily movie conversations. I am going to selfishly just really spotlight one of our members over the last several years. I'm not speaking for Eric or Bruce. I think if there is a quote unquote king and queen of our members with respect to people like William Lindis, Matt Stillman, Joseph Bridges, he just unearths. We at Cinematics, we try to unearth a lot of gems. Joseph Bridges unearths gems it seems to me, almost every single day. He has an amazing track record. He is posting several times a week on just movies that I never even heard of. I don't know how Eric and Bruce feel about Joseph Bridges?
I don't even think the filmmakers heard of him.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Joseph probably posts the movies and they'll see it and they go, "Oh, we made that? Weird."
Okay, so here's the thing: Joseph Bridges, again, a member of our Facebook group. If you do not join our group, I'm just going to listeners. There is a movie that he recommended recently, which Bruce was smart enough to put down for next week. We're going to review it. Maybe Bruce will review it, or maybe all three of us will review it. There's a movie called The Artifice Girl, and the plot summary is, quote, two agents who track down child predators discover their unsolicited outside help has been coming from one person. They soon discover the help they're getting is going to change the course of human history. Now, what's interesting about The Artifice Girl, which is right now, it is streaming on Hoopla as of this recording, and it's added to Joseph Bridges, his letterbox of underseen gems. Here's the thing. He left a comment which really stuck with me. Quote, I can't think of a single person in this group that wouldn't like this movie. I give 4 stars like Hundreds of Beavers. I don't think I've ever said that. So this is a huge high praise from Joseph Bridges. I've never heard about The Artifice Girl. I used to have a running joke, and it's still a running joke with Anderson Cowan. When he used to be on Cinematics a couple of years ago, I would tell Anderson, oh, I have 100,000 unopened emails in my Gmail. Well, 2 years later, I now have about 155,000 unopened emails. One of those unopened emails is The Artifice Girl, which I should have opened. They were offering interviews, and I'm sorry, Eric, and screenings and all that stuff back in April of last year. I missed it. Eric missed it. We should have been on the ball. Not you, Eric. I should have been on the ball. But we will be on the ball next week to maybe show some love. Or who knows? Maybe it might not be a good movie. Maybe Joseph Bridges led us wrong. I don't think so. We're going to be covering The Artifice Girl. What? Any thoughts? Any additions of Joseph Bridges or Cinematics of group or anything?
I would just add on, I think my favorite weird old-time discovery last year was the phone box that he had suggested, which is that short from Spain from like 1971 or something. And I've watched 2/3 of The Artifice Girl, and I'll just say that it's going to be an interesting discussion. And I would definitely say for sure Eric should watch it, because it seems like something that would be very interesting to him, just the way it deals with some issues.
Oh, well, deals with some. Are you saying Eric's more cerebral than me? Why are you leaving?
No, because it's not. I wouldn't say it's courtroom drama. Okay. I would say it as. It is not a courtroom drama, so don't get me wrong there.
Even courtroom adjacent, I'm in.
There's just elements of discussing and debating issues and things that might happen in the world that I think will tickle that part of his brain, I think. I could be wrong. Sweet.
Okay, well, let's see.
Quick. Mm-hmm. Bruce Hoover write about The Straight Story, written by John Roach and Mary Sweeney.
Okay. Sorry. Write about something.
Sorry, I had Anthony Hopkins that for a second, but...
Okay, so The Artifice Girl is going to be one of the movies we will be covering, along with the aforementioned French Girl Rewind from Bruce Perky. But before I get to that, it's so important that movies like Hundreds of Beavers, The Artifice Girl, that's what we like to spotlight. We don't like to spotlight some, you know, sometimes we'll just spotlight big movies, but a lot of these movies are unforgettable. And I don't even remember some of their names, Spaceman. And it's one of these things where I just don't want to even remember these big movies that we cover, Spaceman, which we're going to get to in a second. Spaceman, Netflix. Adam Sandler, he's out in space. He's very ambitious. He is, what is it? What's his ethnicity again?
I think in the book, Czech, right?
He's Czech. Bruce, did you notice a Czech accent from Adam Sandler, or is it just Adam Sandler speaking?
I mean, do you have to have the accent of the country in everything that you watch?
Okay. Bruce Perky is starting to.
They're speaking English.
He's starting to defend Spaceman, which I understand because a lot of people in our Cinematic Facebook group really enjoyed this movie. There are a couple of people who were actually on my train. Most of that train is like Silver Streak with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. Everyone's on the Silver Streak train. Okay. They're with Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder. They're all loving Spaceman, the middle class film class crew. They kindly defended it. Bruce might defend it in a second. But again, Czech cosmonaut, Adam Sandler, he's out in space. And he's trying to go to Jupiter, or maybe that song Drops of Jupiter. He's trying to find something behind that. There's some that, what is that? The little purplish thing in the sky. He's trying to find out some of the
like
mysteries.
A dust cloud.
Dust cloud. Very good. Yeah. Eric, did you see Spaceman as well?
Yeah.
Oh, what? Oh, okay. Good. Eric, you saw that. You saw Spaceman. Thank you. Okay. So he's trying to find the dust cloud. What he finds, not a spoiler, is a spider. The spider's not named Wilson. Spider is not named Spidey, just a big spider. there's a spider, there's Adam Sandler, they bond, they talk about life. Spider's trying to get the cosmonaut to talk, to think about his life and his past life and his lack of connection with his wife, played by Carey Mulligan. It cuts to the ship and it cuts to Carey Mulligan's life on Earth, and she, there is a disconnect there. And while he's trying to connect to space, there's a disconnect with him and his wife. That is the premise of Spaceman. Is it a great movie? Who knows? Eric, let's see what you think about this Netflix film, Spaceman.
I thought it was pretty, I guess, soothing might be a word for it.
Soothing.
So I started reading listening to the audiobook on this, and I didn't get very far, mostly because I wasn't quite a fan of how it was written. And I don't know if it was written in a different language, translated to English. Maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. I was first interested in this when the trailer came out, because there's a book I do love called Project Hail Mary. And when I saw the trailer, I thought that it was a trailer for Project Hail Mary, and they changed the name. Quickly found out that's not the case. A lot of both listening to the book, which I eventually bailed on because I just wasn't getting into it, and watching the movie, when Project Hail Mary comes out, there's going to be a bunch of superficial similarities that it will be compared with this. But the movies are the stories are quite different. This one's more of like a meditation on, I guess, relationships, with the spider asking questions and the Nutella product placement, because it's an Adam Sandler movie and you have to have product placement in there somewhere. First of all, like, the music was really soothing. Love
Max Richter. Very good. Max Richter is very good.
Kind of what we were talking about with the Yorgos Lanthimos. The acting is very stylized.
What are you thinking, skinny man?
Right.
Not thinking of anything. Are you
like, they all sound kind of like really quiet and whispery. This is
Paul Dano's the voice. Yeah, Paul Dano's the voice of the spider.
This movie's like ASMR. Like, if you're having trouble sleeping, like, I'm putting this movie on tonight to kind of relax and conk out early. As far as like what it says in the main story, I'm not quite loving it. You know, it does the hey, my husband's doing this very important thing that affects all of us in this, could affect all of us on Earth, could affect the solar system. And my husband, for whatever reason, has to go and do it. And I'm going to jeopardize the mission by being overbearing, complaining wife. The character that I hate in any movie, and the fact that it's a plot point in this, is kind of annoying. But yeah, the ASMR aspect of it, I love. The relationship stuff, kind of, I can take it or leave it, which is unfortunate because that's kind of the whole movie. But I think I might end up more, I didn't hate this movie quite like you do, Greg. Spoiler alert. I think I might lean more towards your side of the coin on this.
Bruce, you know what, when they put something like on a time capsule, right? You bury it, so maybe future generations can unearth it, and maybe it's like, what, I don't know, 2001 A Space Odyssey, maybe Kubrick's Barry Lyndon, whatever. Just time capsule stuff, right? Spaceman and its script should have been shot into space and maybe blown up. I don't know. I think, or maybe just forgotten. I know there are a lot of people who love this movie. I gleaned, gained nothing from this movie whatsoever. Am I overreacting? Bruce, tell me something great.
Well, you're also a misanthrope, so there's that.
Yeah, I'm also a misanthrope. This movie really, I was going to say it sucks, you know what, but that's disrespecting the you know what. Bruce, what do you think about Spaceman?
Well, first of all, you're a known arachnacist, so we know you hate arachnids.
I do. I do hate arachnids. Bruce, do you remember why I hate spiders? Do you remember?
No,
you don't know the story, right?
Assumed that.
You assumed that thing. Okay, you know what they say, you know? Okay, assuming UCLA, I'm in my apartment, get bitten by a spider. Okay, I don't turn into Peter Parker. My face is all puffed up. I had to go to the urgent care. They had to drain the absence from my face, just all of the spider bites. I was urgent care because, and I'm not kidding, that's a...
supposed to rub Nutella into the wound.
Right. I was rubbing Nutella on my spider abscess and all that stuff.
Okay, we're uncovering some things here.
It was a memory from me.
No, this is good, skinny man.
From my UCLA.
You're getting places.
But I do like
what's happening here.
I will say this.
It's okay.
I do kill spiders whenever I see them. Even the smallest spiders.
That's the wrong choice.
I'm a spider killer.
We don't like to be touched.
Very good. That is a line from the spider, a.k.a. Paul Dano. from the movie. Bruce, tell me something great about Spaceman. Please form some kind of rebuttal on this.
Well, I mean, once again, if you're not into the story, you're not into the style, I mean, that is going to be hard to surmount. And this is a very, as Eric has pointed out, it's a very slow, vibey kind of movie. I think
generic, maybe? Generic?
No, I don't think so, because I haven't seen a whole lot of space movies quite like this. I mean, I've seen a couple, like maybe Silent Running kind of is in a similar vein. Solaris? This is almost me. Maybe. I could see some slowest comparison. I think it's more compared to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I think it kind of fits into that category a little bit more. So here's a few things I like about it. First of all, the fact that the the two main plot points of this are Hanush, respect his name. It's Hanush. It's right, not Mr. Spider.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
No, he calls him Skinny Man. And yes. I think that was in the book too. Might have been.
I was figuring in Sandra's contract that he had to have something calling him Skinny the whole movie.
That probably what drew him to the script.
Yeah, and I like the fact that basically this could be seen as the fever dream caused by insomnia from a broken toilet on a spaceship. That could be the entire movie. The fact that the spider loves to hold on and is soothed by the toilet as it's breaking down. I like that. I like the way that they really play with the commercialization of space travel and of this trip. I mean, it's not really the science that they're interested in. It's beating the South Koreans, and they got to make sure that, like, oh, he sees this giant creature. He can't explain even to them what he's seeing, so they might think he's mad, which he might be mad. So he uses the sanitizing agent for the spaceship, which is called Bomba, and he basically has to do an ad for it. There's a lot of little like sly stuff like that in there that I really enjoyed. And I bought into the relationship stuff too. I enjoyed it. I liked it quite a bit.
That is very cool.
It's whether you like the vibe or not. Honestly, if you're not into the vibe, this is just going to be the most boring thing you've ever seen.
I should point out, when I was saying soothing, I meant soothing like, oh, I can go to sleep now. Not like boring, but like the...
I got that too.
Kind of like when you hear like really soft music or like a cool breeze blows across your face on a hot sunny day like that, you know, laying in a hammock. Like, this is the kind of movie like I could put on and I'm not too concerned with what's going on the screen. I'm just kind of letting it wash over me and then just take a nice relaxing nap.
This is Prince of Tides, but Barbara Streisand's a space spider.
There you go.
Well, okay, Spaceman. A couple of things, caveats for me, couple of asides. I love Netflix movies. I usually give them really good reviews. Love them. Love Adam Sandler as an actor and a performer. Love most of his movies that I've seen. I still get emotional watching the third act of, what is it, that movie Click? Is that movie Click? Really?
That is great.
Yeah, Click is great.
I love that.
He's so good. Adam Sandler is really just one of my favorites, okay? Uncut Gems, we don't have to list all that stuff. Spaceman, for me, just from every single minute, I don't know, I was not in a bad mood. I tried to actually accept this movie into my being, and for some reason, it really did not compute for me. None of this movie, I just thought it was a waste of time. The relationship to me was hackneyed. The immersion that you're supposed to feel in space, I don't know, I've seen, but most of the other space movies I've seen had me more immersed than this film. For me, I'm giving this a generous rating of 0 out of 5 stars. So I just really hated the movie. And again, respect.
Zero? It was at least in focus, Greg. Come on. Yeah, give it.
Okay, I'll give it negative point for 0.5. That. I'm gonna lower it to negative 0.5, but you know what? Zero. It's a 0 out of 5 for me. I just didn't get it, Spaceman. I understand what it's trying to go for, but it was a huge blunder of a movie. But again, I'm in the huge minority in this. I think most people really enjoyed Spaceman. Eric, your rating.
Yeah, it was. It looked really pretty. I love the sound design, the music. It was really soothing. The stuff Bruce brought up about we're doing the bond, like turning everything into an advertisement during
the monetization, the commodification of it.
That stuff was clever, but they didn't really dive too deep into any of that. Mostly, this is just going to be a YouTube ASMR video for me, and that has its place, and I will probably use it, you know, as that tonight. I'll probably give a movie, probably 2.5. Like, if it wasn't so soothing, this didn't have a whole lot for me, and the stuff that it did have, is kind of stuff that I'm usually annoyed by in movies, specifically the relationship, the, hey, you're trying to save humanity, but what about me? It's like, really?
This is, yeah.
Can we get over yourself until he gets back? Can we at least do that?
Space Man was a space dud for me. I'm glad you got gave it 2.5, Eric. I can't believe it. Look, I'm glad that Bruce has got to say some really great. He had some great stuff to say about Space Man. Bruce, what is your rating?
I was going to go 4 stars, but because it's so aggravating to Greg, I'm going to go 4.5 stars.
4.5. Bruce, 4.5 stars for Space Man. Are you kidding me on this?
That same rating as Poor Things.
did this movie.
Did I say 2.5? I meant 4 stars. I'm giving it 4 stars.
No, don't do that. Put it back. Put it 2.5, Eric, please. So I can, again, actually give it a.
I'll split the difference. 3 stars. We'll go 3 stars.
You gotta go 3 stars. You gotta recommend the movie. Well, because of the ASMR
stuff. The more I'm thinking of it, like just looking at that purple dust cloud, just listening to the music, and then Paul Dano going,
"Go to sleep, skinny man," or "Go to sleep, skinny human."
Yeah, I'm like, "Yes, I will." Yeah, Paul Dano, spider.
Horrific. Bruce, did that third act really resonate with you, Spaceman? Did those final moments? Did that touch you as a human being?
It touched me with all 8 arms.
I cannot believe this. Okay, so Bruce, Spaceman or Gravity?
Oh,
well, they're different. Gravity is like a action survival movie.
Oh, okay.
I like Gravity.
Really? Okay. So
so probably the same rating.
Okay.
That'd so be
different movies.
I know you hate this movie. You gave it 0 stars. Can we at least agree that Paul Dano's voice is amazing?
Yeah.
He has any other dialogue that you like.
No. Just he's amazing.
Hearing that voice just kind of wash over you. And it's like, chills.
Good voice. The score I was fine with. I like Max Richter as a composer. Adam Sandler, I love to see him. I love Carey Mulligan. I love seeing them. If you actually turn down the volume, this movie's 4 stars for me. But there are words and there's an execution or lack thereof of a story. When there is volume involved in Spaceman, it goes from a 4 to a 0, straight 0 for me.
I mean, okay, it would have been scientifically accurate because he can't hear in space.
Right. All right. Well, look, Eric is now recommending Spaceman at a mild recommendation 3, 4.5 for Bruce. And I'm giving it a big fat 0. That is on Netflix. Love you guys over at Netflix. Love most of the stuff again. And I love Adam Sandler. Moving forward, that is it for our show. There is a box recommendation that Eric got from co-director of French Girl, Nicholas Wright. He mentioned Death of Stalin. Are you going to add that to your box picks or what's in the box? Okay. For what's in the box picks, please email Bruce Perky at bruceperky@gmail.com or just hit him up over on our Cinematics Facebook group. Any final thoughts, Eric Holmes?
Yes. Once again, rest in peace, Brad Finney. And if anyone would like to hear his music, we probably should have said this when it was live, but Nothing Left Official 2601 on YouTube. He's got a bunch of great music, especially if you like singer-songwriter kind of stuff. And some of his songs are really tough to listen to now that he's gone, but he's got some great music. You can watch, look up Bradley Rotten on YouTube. You get to watch a bunch of his promos his promos that he did for the PCW wrestling. Yeah, he was a great guy. We lost a great one, but keep his memory alive because that's all you can do when someone goes away.
We'll leave a link to Brad's stuff over on our show notes. And if you don't know him, get to know him through his music and through his stuff with wrestling. Chris Brookie.
This just in, they are confirming production of Spaceman 2 starring Matt LeBlanc. Having a long conversation in space with a chimp that's going to be voiced by Florence Pugh. So that's going
to be my Pew. So that's it, folks. That's it. Bruce is just trying to get under my skin. Bruce, you succeeded. Okay, that's it. We'll see you guys next week. And of course, sans Spaceman, there's Claire.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for joining Cinematics.